Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Giving like little pearls of wisdom, like he said, if you want to be a great coach, become a teacher, you know. And I thought, what do you mean by that? Then I realized when I did a teacher qualification that football is about teaching people something. And he always seemed to me as this really stern guy, you know. He was like this, you know, Dick's coming in the room, you know, stand by your bed.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me today, a colleague, a mentor, and a friend, Pete Augustin. Evening, Pete, how are you?
I'm very well, Yas. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you. Pete, just for those who, you know, aren't too familiar with who you are and what you do, would you mind just giving us a bit of a backdrop as to what that is?
Yeah, I'm I work for the FA. I'm a coach development officer with a specific remit on diversity and inclusion. So the idea is to see if we can, you know, our mantra is about, you know, dealing with the stubborn inequalities that exist in the game. And ensuring that that minority coaches, coaches who are underrepresented, are given a voice in the game. Before that, I was a county coach developer, which was, basically somebody who looked after running courses and that sort of stuff.
Brilliant, right, Pete? You know, I just want to take you right to the heart of it and back to your, I guess, coaching journey and the start of that. Obviously, you know, knowing you quite well, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, you playing at a reasonable level earlier in your career. But where did coaching come around for you? You know, how did you first get involved in coaching? What was it about coaching that kind of grabbed your eye?
It's weird. If I think back to my earliest, if you like, recollections of coaching, it probably started when I was probably about 12. Because I started coaching myself. Because I wasn't the most gifted, naturally gifted of football players, if that actually exists. And because I was quite studious, I wanted to learn about the game. I wanted to learn about how I could be better as a footballer. So I would buy coaching books. And the first book that I bought, well, actually, when I say I bought it, I won a prize at school for being a good boy. And it was a book voucher. The book voucher I bought, the first book, was by a guy called Gerhard Bauer. I don't even think you can get that book now, but it was about the idea of the techniques of football. So how you could kick the ball, how you could pass it, how you could do inside of the foot curling balls, outside of the foot curling balls. And I'd go out in the garden, in my garden, and annoy the neighbours and just keep kicking balls against the back wall. And so that was kind of, you know, I wanted to learn about the intricacies of the game. I wanted to know how to do things. And then, you know, fast forward a few years later, I then took on a team. I was 14 and I became the manager of the local youth club team. I didn't know anything about coaching or anything like that, but I just took the team. We had a concrete court that we would train, And we'd train, I think it was a Tuesday night, I think, if I remember rightly, and we'd gabble and we'd play. Basically, we were just playing football. That's all we were doing. There was no coaches. And then and I think I managed to get the famous Luther Blissett one day to come down and give us a coaching session. And that was only because I knew his brother. So he came down and, you know, he was at the height of his powers then. And he came down and did a coaching session for us. And then really, then after that, it was a case of I got into non-league football, played. And then when I was coming towards the end of my coaching career, I got a player coach role at a club called Beaconsfield Cycle. And I went there for 5 years. And that's how it really started, because I wanted to stay involved in football after finishing playing. And coach was the only way I could do that. And when I was offered that opportunity, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I spent 5 years there just learning the game. I don't think I started my level two until I was at the end of the time when I was there. So, and even then, you know, I'd spent, like, I think when I found out, I needed badges, I spent 2 years trying to get on a level two course, which, you know, unlike today where you can just make a phone call and you're on a course, that back then it was, you know, you really had to work hard to get yourself on a course,
you know. And you obviously, just on that, you know, you talked there about getting involved and having those 5 years and really grafting, but, you know, having that exposure from early on, I like the way that you talked about you were coaching from the age of 12 and you start coaching yourself. I guess, you know, I want to take you right, you know, touch on a few points that you mentioned there. Firstly, with that, what did that look like? Obviously, you're reading books. How would you go around maybe self-correcting, self-diagnosing where you could maybe further develop and where you were doing well in that respect?
Well, it was funny, because what I did is I created and devised a series of challenges for myself as a 12-year-old. So I drew, it would probably be classed as graffiti now, I drew on a wall at a local school that was just around the back of the house that I lived in with my mum and dad. And I drew several lines. And when I was trying to do like curling shots, I'd think, well, I'd give myself 2 points if I hit it inside that line and 3 points if I hit it in that side line and so on and so forth. And, you know, then I would do things like kick the ball up against the wall, which is just simple stuff, you know, and I would try and sort of like do volleys back. So could I do a side volley? Could I do a volley as it came back with my instep, side foot, all that sort of stuff? That's what I practiced. And, you know, that was the kind of, you just kind of made it up as you went along. There was no formula. There was nobody to tell me that you did it wrong. You just did it. And then when I went and played in games for like the youth club or the school or whatever, and then occasionally a ball would come to me and, you know, might be a volley, and I'd hit it straight away, because I didn't think about it, because I'd been practicing it and practicing it and practicing it. And so that thing around, you know, self, you know, I think youngsters do it today. They self-correct. The difference is now we've got coaches who are telling them when to self-correct. But I think kids will self-correct themselves if they're given enough time to do that.
No, I totally agree. And I think, you know, then, you know, the question is then, and I'm sure we'll get onto this later, but, you know, just touching it now, really, in that, as a coach, when is the right time to get involved? You know, I think it'd be interesting to get your thoughts, to be honest. Things have shifted massively over the last few years, and you talk there about your level two when you're getting on that, probably quite a challenge in that, and obviously nowadays it's a bit more of an entry-level qualification almost. And even within that, the pathway has changed so much from maybe when you...
I've lost you.
Yeah.
Oh, I got you back, yeah.
So the pathway has changed so much, you know, from maybe when you did your level two to when I've done mine and what it looks like now. So I think for a lot of learners and coaches out there, would you mind just speaking to what that was like in terms of understanding some of the technical aspects of it? Because obviously you mentioned there, you referenced a book that you purchased as a you know, with your book voucher.
Yeah.
So, you know, what was that like in terms of, you know, going through the course at that time? And, you know, what was the... Where was most of the focus for the courses shifted to then?
Well, a lot of the courses back at the level two when I did it was very, very much about technical, you know, a technique skill game. So what was the technique to do something? What was the technique to run with the ball? What was the technique to dribble? What was the technique to to maybe even to head. Everything, there was a technique that was associated with it. Then it would be, how would you then advance that on with a little bit of pressure? Then what would it look like in a game? So the idea was around seeing your level of competence within that coaching course. And it, listen, it has its place. And I think there were some aspects of it that were very good. I think for me, the question that I always ask myself is the why. Well, if I'm going to run with the ball, why would I run with the ball? So I remember when I first became a tutor and I did my first level two and I'd become the county coach developer. And I remember saying to a coach that I was working with at the time, another coach, tutor, I said, when we start to look at the practices that we're going to do, let's look at the why as to why. Well, we're going to invent a practice. Let's make the practice have to make the players run with the ball, as opposed to just saying you're just going to run with the ball. And I think that was, you know, we had quite a bit of success with that on that course, I remember rightly, because the coaches were then able to see when I would run with the ball. Because if you're doing a practice, you don't want to just be running with the ball all the time, because that's not what the game looks like. You run with the ball because there's a reason to run with the ball. You dribble because there's a reason to dribble. You shoot because there's a reason to shoot. You just don't do these things in isolation. And I think now the courses are much more around, not there is a technical aspect to it, but there's also things around the psychological and the social aspects of coaching. You know, how do we make players feel when we coach them? What skill sets do players come into? Do we recognize that? So it's become, although you might say, people might say the level two is almost like an entry level, there's so much more to it than that. Because if you think about it, if you're a grassroots coach, you're dealing with parents, you're dealing with other members of the club, you're dealing with opposition, all those things, and they come into the level two, the current level two. So I think there's going to be I'm pretty sure there's a revamp of it. But I think one of the things I would say is that we go in phases and we start to think about, well, what's the game going to look like in 5 years? What do the coaches need to know? What do they need to know now? What are they going to need to know in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, 4 years' time? So I think that it's very difficult to design a course. And anybody who's got that job, it's a hard job to design a course that fits all the things that, especially that grassroots coaches are going to have to deal with.
Mm. You know, kind of just on that, you talked about, you know, designing a course and looking at where things need to be further developed. And, you know, you touched on, obviously, yes, there probably is some element of a technical aspect of it, but it's much more of a holistic thing now.
Mm.
Would you say that being the case, that there's less coaches coming through that I guess have a good technical base and underpinning the technical aspect of the game?
I don't think it's the course that gives you that. I think people think that it should be the course that gives you that. It shouldn't be the course that gives you that. The course is a framework for you to go and then to start to discover stuff. And if you think that the course is going to give you technical knowledge, you're not on the right course. You know, if you think about, if you did a GCSE in biology, the GCSE in biology wouldn't teach you everything you need to know about biology, would it? It would, you would then have to go and take maybe an A level or an A plus level. You can tell I ain't been at school for a long time. You have to keep going and finding the knowledge. And I think that's one of the things that I believe it's slightly missing, is that coaches expect the courses to give them everything. It's, the course isn't designed to do that. The course is designed to get your juices flowing, to want you to go out and find more ways of doing stuff and your own way of doing stuff. Because, you know, nobody wants, because what you end up with is you end up with clones of the coach educator, if you go down that road. And nobody doesn't want, you know, another clone of Peter Augustine. That's the horrible thing to have to think about. So I think that we have to, you know, as coaches have to be prepared to go out and do extra learning themselves, whether that's from the book, from books, from the internet, whatever it is, and then decide what bits they want to take and what's better for their players. That's the thing that's important. It's the players that are important. You know, we mustn't forget them.
Definitely. I think, you know, just on that then, you know, for coaches who maybe have got the mindset that the coach, you know, wanting to go onto a course to maybe obtain some of that information and maybe haven't really gotten as much as they would maybe have wanted or expected from it, what would your advice be to them in terms of where to start? Because you know, you can talk there about reading books, going on the internet, and I think you probably agree with me that one of the best ways to do is actually just watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
But quite often the coaches come in at that level, and you know, dare I say it, some even beyond that, struggle to understand maybe what that actually means and how and what to actually look out for when they are watching the game, and they tend to just then end up becoming a ball watcher rather than actually looking and studying what's actually happening with, you know, both on and away from the ball.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a grassroots coach and you're working with the under sevens and you're watching a game with Manchester United and Manchester City, there are certain things that you'll see, but you have to understand that all those things that you see aren't always going to apply to you. You've got to look at the pieces that you think might apply to you. So I will look at, say, for example, if I'm working with, I currently work with two teams at the moment, under 14s and then under 16s. So what I look at is, okay, if I'm looking at, say, David Silva, who was formerly at Manchester City, you know, Bernardo Silva, you're looking at them and you're going, okay, why are they so good? What are the things that make them this top player, or this top midfield player? What is it that makes, say, Sadio Mane such a lethal striker? What is it that makes Mo Salah a lethal striker? And all those, and I look at that. Now, when I look at that, I then go, right, okay, what bits can I, out of that, can I possibly teach my players? Okay, that's the first thing. Then I look at the information that I already have and I try to marry the two up. If you're a coach and you want to know about the game, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to look at your players. Well, what can they do and what can't they do? Where are they struggling and where do they need help? If you don't do that, I think you're doing them a disservice, because it's no point trying to give them something that they can't do. Young players don't make mistakes because they want to. They normally make them because they don't actually know, you know. So what your job is to see the bits that they're missing. That's my thing. And we need to spend more time looking at young players and going, okay, how can I help this player? When does that player need me? As opposed to, I'm going to give them help whether they want it or not.
I think it's definitely an interesting point. I was having a conversation with someone today around feedback and sometimes unsolicited feedback. And I think that aspect of, right, is it the right time? I think, you know, you've got to pay closer attention. I think certainly you make a great point in that the younger players, if you're working with young players, you know, not to base what you're going to do with them on what's happening in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, spot on. The message I was trying to give other coaches is, well, look at the game as it is at the level you're playing at.
Mm.
You are an under-9s coach, an under-10s coach, whatever age group that might be, and wherever that might be, go and watch more of those games and see what happens and what are the regularities and what are the consistencies in those games, and then start to plan around that. I want to kind of bring it back to your journey a little bit now. You know, you talk there about your role as a coach with inclusion and diversity officer.
It's development officer, yeah.
Development officer. Yeah. How important do you think that is, first of all? And more specifically, linking to that, what are some, you know, how important is that role to you? You know, being from an underrepresented group yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, beyond that, would you mind speaking to maybe some of the challenges that you faced also being from an underrepresented group?
I think the job itself is vitally important. I think one of the things is you have to normalize people of different ethnicities in the game, because it's normal in the top level of the game. You can't turn on a game and not see ethnically diverse team in the Premier League, in the Football League, in the conference, and right the way throughout the pyramid. I think what we have to start recognizing is that the game is diverse by nature. And as the game is diverse in its nature, what is it that the people who run the game? What should it look like? So we've got to start to, first of all, in the first instance, is get coaches to understand that, you know, sorry to say, the game isn't fair. The game's not fair. So if the game's not fair, well, how do we make it fairer? So I think some of those things that we have to do is we have to make challenges. We have to if there are boards of directors or committees and stuff like that, you know, Black and Asian coaches have to get on those and not worry about the fact that, well, actually, I'm not going to be out on the field and coaching. Yes, you will. If you want to coach, you always find a way. I think my journey was weird because I spent many years thinking that the game was fair, thinking that I was going to get a chance, thinking that I was going to one day work as a Premier League manager. I thought that that was going to happen. And then when I left Beaconsfield and I went onto my B license and I moved to Surrey, I realised the game wasn't fair, because there were people who were telling me, you know, this is what the game looks like. And they were showing me things and explaining things to me that I hadn't actually realised that existed, because I kind of existed in a bubble, because I had the job at Beaconsfield. All I did was I went there Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. That was my coaching. And that was it. When I moved to Surrey, I had to find another club. I had to try and find my way into places. And then I started to realise, well, actually, some of this stuff I've never experienced this before. You know, people saying things to me. I remember once I was manager of a club and I was in the dugout. No, I was assistant. And I was sitting in the dugout and a fan from the opposite side just came round, stuck his head around the dugout and said to me, "Does your slave master know you're here?" You know, what? You know, but my instant reaction was to jump out of the dugout and try and find this individual. But he'd run off. And I'd never really experienced that. I knew that racism in football existed, obviously, because I did. But when you're the direct recipient of it in that way, especially as a coach, you don't expect it. I almost expect it as a player. I mean, my first game that I played when I was playing for Hendon was I was mercilessly abused for 90 minutes. I remember coming out of the tunnel and I'd just come out of the youth team. And as I came out, I was the second to last one that came out of the tunnel. And then I heard this, ooh, 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 ooh. And I came out and I go, geez, I wonder who they're doing that to. Tell you what, want to be that fella. And then when the first time I got the ball and this cacophony of monkey charts came up, I thought, oh God, it's me. And they went to me. And I looked around the picture and goes, oh, I'm the only Black person in the ground. You know, and that was when it hit me then. I realised, oh geez, you know, this is what the likes of the Luther Blissetts and the Cyril Regis have had to put up with for years. I think then the difficulty that I had getting onto courses was I found that, you know, absolutely, you know, really tough. And I think the toughest part was when I remember asking an individual who at the time was a coach educator. I said, look, I want to get on a course. I didn't know they were a coach educator. I said, I want to do one of these courses. Do you know how I get on one? And this individual said to me, you don't want to do that, son. You're all right. You're all right as you are. You got a job. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You don't need any of that stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, wow. And then years later, this person, I saw that they were a coach educator. I think, well, why would you say that to me? You know, so you then start and you see these people still about and you go, well, what? How? But the thing about it is that individual won't remember that conversation. I do. So it's those sort of things that as you go through your coaching journey, you start to think to yourself, this isn't going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be. This is a lot tougher. And so my thing then for me was I was just going to be the best possible coach that I could be. So I keep trying to learn. I never stop. It's a lifelong journey for me. I remember, you know, Dick Bate, the great FA coach educator, giving like little pearls of wisdom. Like he said, if you want to be a great coach, become a teacher. you know, and I thought, what do you mean by that? Then I realized when I did a teacher qualification that football is about teaching people something. And he always seemed to me as this really stern guy. You know, he was like, this, you know, Dick's coming in the room, you know, stand by your bed. But this guy had this unerring ability to simplify the game. You know, he really, really had a really brilliant ability to do that. And so learning of people like him during a time when I was really learning was really important. Noel Blake was another one. Absolutely fantastic coach, absolutely top jaw. This guy really could make, like Dick, could make the most complicated things seem so simple. His knowledge was like unbelievable. And having been in the company of people like that, he said, I want to be like him. I really want to be like him. I think that, you know, if I could have half his knowledge, then I'm going in the right direction. So I think, you know, because I could kind of sit here and say, oh, this has happened to me, that's happened to me, and I've already had a couple of stories. But I think I want to concentrate on some of the positives, which are the idea of who were the people who, when you look back at it, look back at your coaching, and you go, you know what, that person there, they inspired me by doing this. They inspired me by saying this. You know, it's those things, those moments. And I think that's the other thing when you talk about, you know, where the coaches get their learning, is not being frightened to ask somebody who's more experienced than them, what do you think of this? I think this, what do you think? You know, that was something that during my journey, that was missing a lot. It was missing a lot. It's not like that now.
So I guess, you know, just on that then, you know, you mentioned a couple of names there in Dick Bate and Noel Blake, and I guess some of the people that inspired your journey. I'm just curious to know then, you know, it could include them, it might be in addition to them. What would you say some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from people like that who you'd maybe consider as senior figures or mentors yourself?
I think the biggest thing that I learned from, especially from those two, was that you never stop learning. You never, ever stop learning. That learning journey never stops. I know that Dick was on my A license, but you never really got to know Dick that well. But I could see that he was the guy who, at the end of an evening, you wouldn't find Dick in the bar, you know, where other coaches were. Dick has gone up to bed, he was reading, he was watching a game, whatever it is. You know, I'd heard that he's got a massive library of games and stuff like that he watches, and he can tell you about teams in all different parts of the world because he was a student of the game. Noel, pretty much the same. He just loved, you know, Noel always seemed like quite a stern guy, but when you got talking to him, and I did manage to talk to him on a number of occasions, he was just a really lovely guy. He would talk to you about football because he loved it. He, you know, that passion showed through. And I think for me, that's the thing that, you have to, you know, with all the things that have happened to me in football, some have been very bad and some have been very good. But the one thing that I never lost is that my passion for the game, I just love the game. So if I can't say, for example, if I can't be in a pro club, if I can't be in the FA, I'll still coach. I'd still do it. If this wasn't my job, I would still coach. So I think, you know, when you start to think about some of the other people as well who were big influences to me, people like Colin King, massive influence. He was the one who pushed me onto my A license. I mean, these are, you know, somebody who actually said, you can do it. Yeah. There's lots of people who've sort of like, who've influenced my journey, but there were very few people who went, actually, you can do this. You should do it. You know, why haven't you done it? Why haven't you gotten your A license? Why haven't you done this? Why haven't you done that? Those people are huge, and it's important to remember those people, because that's how you got. Nobody gets to where they are without any help. No one does.
Mm. Yeah. I can definitely echo that. You know, but I wanted to come back to something that you said before about being able to actually reach out and ask people for support, and I think that's a key thing. I think a lot of coaches or just people in general aren't as willing to do that because they don't know you know, maybe that fear of rejection, that I'm not going to help you, or completely ignore, you know, being ignored or whatever that might look like. Now, I want to kind of take you back to your current role a little bit. Then, you know, would you mind just going into a bit of detail and just helping the listeners and the viewers understand a little bit more about what your role is and what that entails more specifically in terms of coach development?
My role is really it's about helping coaches to be the best that they can be, really. So it's kind of like a bit of coaching, coach education, coach development, mentoring. It's a bit of kind of everything, really. And the role's quite new, so we're kind of forming it as we go along. So the idea is to be a lot more specific around, you know, how we coach, who we interact with. You know, my focus is Black and Asian coaches at the moment, and diversity and inclusion. So to ensure that, you know, if somebody comes along to me and they say to me, look, I'm struggling here, it's to go and help them, and you know, maybe to go into their club, maybe do something online with them, you know, because we have a digital first model, which means really we can do stuff digitally. Like we can, you know, something like a podcast or a webinar, and we can talk about football from that point of view. Somebody can give me a call and show me what they're going to do in their next session, and we talk about that. So it's just to give the people support where we can be a little bit more efficient about that. You know, we don't always have to go into their club and travel halfway across London or halfway across the world to give that support. We can give the support like now, you know, online.
Thank you for that. And obviously, you know, for the, in terms of obviously your role now, you know, you mentioned obviously you previously were county coach developer, but we had a range of roles before that. What would you say, you know, your time within, I guess, coaching, more specifically in these recent roles, has really taught you about leading other people?
I think if you actually think about my role really has is to do stuff with people as opposed to them, which is kind of a mentoring thing. I think when you're running a course, as you know, you'll have different people at different levels when they come into the course. Some people will be quite knowledgeable. Some people will be quite opinionated. Some people will be very quiet. Some people will have little or no knowledge. They see football.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
They like football, but they just want to get into it and know a bit more, and they think the course will give them that. So for me, it's to find out where they are in that journey. In the old role, in the CCD role, which is a fantastic role, one of the things that you couldn't be as connected as you would want to be, because you've got the coaches there for a certain amount of time. Once the course is over, you're then on the next course. So that can be quite difficult. But you still do, if you make the right connections, people will connect with you afterwards. And I think it's really important to keep that connection with the coaches that you work with, because if you don't, you're not really doing your job properly. And development isn't about, just doing one thing with the person. It's about doing many things with them. I think that's really important. I think this role gives me that opportunity to do that, to actually really look at maybe not just maybe a coach, but groups of coaches, and work with them to help them develop them, to help them to develop themselves, and give them that, again, that sense of, let's fall in love with learning about the game.
No, I think, you make a great point there, and it is about falling in love with the game. And obviously, I'm similar to yourself, I probably took a path down coaching because I actually had a passion for the game more than probably the same loads of people. Mm-hmm. You've been in the game a long time now, both initially as a player, but just to being a passionate member of the community within football.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is some of the biggest bugbears are when it comes to coaching specifically for you? Then, over the years, you've probably seen loads, and now you're working with coaches on a daily basis. And you have been doing for a number of years. What would you say the most consistent, maybe biggest bugbears for you?
I think it's when sometimes when coaches just are in a hurry to get qualifications, say, for example, or in a hurry to get the next thing, as opposed to understanding actually part of your journey is to get the experience, so that when somebody asks you something, that you can speak from a voice of experience. I want you to do this because this is what happens if you don't, or have you thought about maybe this? Those are the little nuances that I think coaches kind of forget about coaching. You've got to have some sort of experience. I think another thing for me is the fact that the playing field isn't equal. That's the biggest thing. That's the thing that really, that rankles me, is to know that sometimes you go for an interview and you're not going to get the job. You try and do something, and the person that you're speaking to isn't going to give you a fair shout. I think those are some of the things that rankle me. Because I just think it's just unnecessary. It's unnecessary to have a situation where there's a little old boys network or a little clique where people say, well, no, you would take him, but we won't take you. We better take him because of this, that, and the other, whatever. No, if you make everything fair and open and transparent, you don't have to worry about whether or not you're upsetting someone or whatever. You don't have to worry about that. That's not a problem, because you've got fair and open transparency, and anybody can point the finger at you and you can say, no, this is what we did, this is how we did it. Boom. May not suit you, but this is the way we do it. And it's that fairness that I think I strive for all the time. I just want, things to be fair. It's hard when you're not the person who's making the decisions. And it's hard when you see things and you think, well, that's not right. Those are the things that bother me. Even more than, that probably bothers me more than when people rush in. if you're rushing and you're getting somewhere, then fine, no problem. But I just think it just needs to be a lot fairer. If it's fairer, then happy days. But I think we talk about diversity and inclusion, and what does that look like? Well, let's put it this way. I'm doing a bit of writing at the moment, which a lot of people would probably find quite amazing that I'm actually writing anything. And I was thinking about this idea of culture, right? When we look at say, for example, a team signing a player, does the club, does anybody look at the player's culture, where they come from, their background? And that doesn't have to mean, that culture doesn't mean colour. It doesn't mean race, and it doesn't mean religion. It's culture. You can have subcultures within cultures. So imagine if you're a poor white boy from a deprived area of Liverpool, right? You're going to have more in common with a poor black boy from a deprived area of Liverpool than you are with a rich white boy from Liverpool, because you're having the grind. You've got the grind. You speak in a certain way. You act in a certain way. You know, you behave in a certain way because your culture expects that of you. Yeah. So, I mean, the difference then is in our society, unfortunately, is if I'm a white guy and I put on ears and graces and I speak with a different accent, then actually I'll get through the door easier. You know, but when you walk in the room and you're black or Asian, well, everybody sees that straight away. But we have to understand that. That's the way of the world. Culture is part of what we do. So we have to understand culture. If we don't understand culture, we are going to be struggling straight away to have a fairer and an equal society. Understand that I'm different from you, but it doesn't mean that different is bad. Let's celebrate each other's culture, as opposed to saying, well, you're over there, I'm going to keep you over there. And I'm going to stay over here because you don't want me. That's not how the world should act, but maybe I'm being a little bit utopian.
You definitely make a point there in that it is about cultures. It is about, I guess in most cases, education more than anything else, and understanding and awareness, and as the saying goes, you don't know what you don't know until you know.
Mm.
So I guess, on that, with all those challenges that there are in that respect, what's, I know we've spoken a few times about this in the past, but we're interested in your own words again. What is your biggest motivation, and what helps keep you inspired to kind of keep pushing those barriers and keep trying to go down that path and, I guess, continue with that journey, so to speak?
I think just because if I can do just a little bit to make the football world a bit fairer, then I think, then I need to do that little bit. I'm just a coach, ostensibly, who happens to work for the FA. I'm no better than anyone else. I'm no cleverer. I'm just a coach. But the thing is, what should happen and what drives me on is, can I get somebody to actually understand and to be seen? Well, actually, it's going to be a bit fairer. It's going to be a bit better for the next person who comes along. Who comes after me is important. If they understand that actually their behaviours have consequences, the way they speak to people has consequences, the way they interact with people has consequences. That's the thing that drives me on. So I try to think to myself, okay, if I'm talking to somebody, if I was that individual, how would I feel if I spoke to that person like this? How would I feel if say, for example, I was given feedback and I gave it back in a certain way? So I'm really conscious of that, So I'm working with a coach at the moment, and I know this coach likes a lot of feedback that's visual. So I have to think about, okay, how do I help that coach visualize stuff that helps them? That's kind of, so I'm always thinking about the person I'm interacting with in the first instance, as opposed to going, right, okay, I'm going to do this because it's more convenient for me, because that's not my role. My role is to ensure that the person who I'm trying to give information to can get it. If I can't do that, then I have to find somebody else who can, who might help me to do that. And I think that's what's really important. That's kind of what I strive for all the time, is to finding that balance between being the coach that's helping, but also not being a crutch, if you like.
I think, you know, he makes some good points there as well. And it's just about, it is almost that element of, yeah, we need to share knowledge. And, you know, if we are going to be communicating something, I think we've got to take responsibility to making sure that message is communicated effectively, not for us in terms of delivery, but for the recipient in their understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, you know, you talked there earlier about Noel Clark, Noel Blake and Dick Bate, and how they were able just to kind of simplify these things. So, you know, I guess to a layman in any, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, and that's a real skill, I guess, you know. So the question is, you know, in pursuit of that, what are some of the things that you could maybe suggest that people do to kind of get towards being able to do that?
I tell you what, the thing about it is, it's funny. Connikin sent me a video of the day we spent with Dick at Bisham Abbey. It was a group of, I think, about 24, 25 Black, Asian and female coaches, and we were doing an A license prep day. And at the time, Dick was telling us some stuff about how we organise a session. And at the time, I'm looking at it, yeah, I kind of get it, but I don't quite get it. I watched it a few days ago and I thought, oh, exactly, that's exactly it. But I didn't know, I didn't have the knowledge at the time to be able to work out what you were saying. Now, this is the thing. That's why it's so important to get the experience and to keep challenging yourself to get knowledge. Because what happens, what you don't know today, you will know tomorrow. And I think that's the thing that's important to me, is that once you understand that, once you realize that it's that piece around experience, knowledge, a continual learning. You might not understand something that you read in the book today because it might be a bit beyond your knowledge at that time, because there isn't a base behind it. But as you go on, carry on going down the journey, what happens is it starts to become clearer. And I think that I would always say to coaches, just keep learning. Don't worry about that. You don't get it today. You might not get it, but if you keep learning, you will get it. And things just keep coming back to you. You go, oh yeah, I remember when he said that to me. I remember when she said that. You start to get those messages. And I think that's what's really important.
Yeah, you definitely agree with that. I think in terms of getting that experience, you know, I like the saying, you know, you can't connect the dots from the windscreen, but you can look in the rear view to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's only once it's gone, then you can start looking at, you know, but I think, you know, that part there, that piece, that reflection piece is key. And trying to connect those dots, you know, why are things happening? Not being more curious and asking those questions as to what's going on there, why is that the way it is, and, you know, why have they done this? And, you know, I think those bits are really key. So, you know, kind of, you know, as we start to wind down, though, then if we're now looking in that rear view, looking at connecting some dots, you know, if you had to go back to yourself initially as a 12-year-old self-coaching, and then, you know, a few years down the line when you actually got involved in coaching proper, what would be messages that you'd give yourself at those 2 points based on the experience and the journey you've had so far?
I think I'd tell myself not to be scared. I think that was the biggest thing. I did a lot of stuff out of fear and not out of, you know, because I always thought that I was going to be judged. So what I should have done is gone, right, you know, just go and do it. You know, you've got nothing to lose. You've got nothing to fear. And I think it's having the confidence in yourself and to believe in yourself. I think that was the thing. I used to do stuff and I used to think, I wonder if that's right. Well, I can remember when I was at Beaconsfield, I remember I took the reserves and we were playing in quite a low league. I won't say what it is, and just in case that any of the people who were in that league are listening. But we got promoted. We made 3 promotions in 4 years, I think it was. You know, not because I was particularly a good coach, I don't think, because I didn't have that knowledge, but I took what I knew and then started to look at it from a point of view of, if I did this, what would that look like in the game? That was my curiosity. So I think what I would say is trust yourself. If you're going to make a mistake, you're going to make a mistake. You know what I mean? By doing nothing, you don't achieve anything. You don't find out anything. And I think the other thing that I would tell myself is always have people around you who will question you. It's a big thing. When I was manager at one club, I surrounded myself with people who thought like me. And when things didn't go well, there was nobody to tell me, actually, Pete, what's happening? Here's a load of rubbish, you know? And then made me think. And it wasn't until after I got sacked from that job that I went, oh, actually, maybe what I was thinking was totally wrong. Because I had this idea that we were going to play out no matter what, but you can't do that. You know, you have to look at the league that you're playing in, the players that you have. You know, are the players capable of doing what you want them to do? And I didn't do that. And that was my fault. And then everybody else around me was saying the same thing. I'll keep doing it because it's going to come good. Well, at that time, you're in the results business. The chairman wants you to get wins. And you've got to get wins. If you don't get them, the chairman's getting rid of you, which is what happened. You know, I mean, what he said to me after he got rid of me wasn't great. But the point is, if you judge it on results, you got sacked for the right reasons because you didn't get results because it's a results business. You know, when you start to work at development level and you're developing players, again, you've got to have people who question you. Well, why are you doing that? Is that making the player better or is it making them worse?
You know? Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, it's important to have those people around you that are going to challenge your views and, you know, sometimes contradict those views. And I think just having those people around you can cause you to become more curious about yourself. But, you know, if you've got a growth mindset in any sense anyway, you know, just to kind of build on that, you know, what would you say you know, the fundamentals are to your own philosophy and the way that you work?
It's just about players, just about the players. Everything that I do is about the players. You know, if I'm coaching the team, it's all about the players. If I'm going to work on coach education, it's all about the coaches. What do the coaches want? Mm. What do they need? It's not down to me to give them to say you need this. Mm. You know, it's down to me to say, okay, what do you think you need? And how do you think I can help you? Same thing with players. Okay, you lose a game, and listen, as you go through your coaching career, you're going to lose games. Sometimes you lose a game, and those games are the games where you learn the most. It's the games that the players learn the most, because certain things happen, and then they start to go, oh right, okay, I understand what you were saying there.
Just on that, then, you know, you say those games that you lose, you know, where you can learn the most. But I think just on a point to kind of add to that is you can only get that learning if you start to ask yourself the right questions. You know, I think certainly for myself in my journey, mm-hmm. As time's gone on, I feel like I'm becoming more self-aware, mm-hmm. and really starting to challenge myself and asking those questions. So I guess, you know, it's kind of on that then, you know, just kind of talked us through some of the things that you've been through. You've talked us through what your role looks like now. Mm. Obviously, recently stepping into that role. Mm. But what's next for Pete Augustine?
You know, I don't really know, you know. That's if I'm honest. Don't really know. I know that what I'd ideally like to do, I'd like to work in international football if I could. But I don't know if that's gonna come to me. I just want to keep growing as a coach. I mean, that sounds a bit trite, doesn't it? You know, I want to be a great coach, you know, but I do. I want to just keep being better, and people who then I come across then see me as an all right person, because I think that's the most important person. But most important thing is that you have to be a decent person first. And that's so people will come and ask you for stuff. In my role, you know, I honestly, when I say to coaches, if you want help, call me, you know, email me. You know, it's not that deep. Yeah, it might take me a bit of time to get back to you, but I'll always get back to you because I think it's important. to get back to coach. Sometimes, yeah, listen, there has been times when I haven't got back to coaches, and that's only because sometimes I've got myself so busy that I'm trying to help everybody, you know. But the whole point about this new role is that it will allow me to be a lot more strategic to be able to help people. Just because, you know, I work in diversity and inclusion doesn't mean to say that any coach couldn't call me up and say to me, yeah, could you help me? Because I will, because that's, you know, that's the humanist thing to do. I think, you know, so if you said to me now, where do I see myself in 5 years' time, say, for example, I would find that difficult to answer, because my journey thus far hasn't been really that planned. I've just worked and worked and worked, and then an opportunity has presented itself to me. I've applied and then I've gone on. But the learning, you know, I worked at, I remember when I started up, I used to work in a beer factory, and I used to work night shifts and coach a junior team at the same time. So we used to be able to earn like quite a bit of money at the weekends for overtime. And I decided that I didn't want to do overtime in the winter. I wanted to coach football. And all the guys in the factory used to say to me, oh, you're mad, you're crazy. Do you know how much money you're losing? Blah, 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 blah. I said, yeah, but this is, I said, if we ever lose this job, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into football. And there was one guy, there was only one guy at the factory who would say to me, Pete, you've got to go for it. And it's a guy called Amos Justin. I was name checking because I remember when I was going through my license, he said, if you don't go on your A license, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. And he was right. I'm glad I did it. But when I was working, when the factory closed down and I got made redundant, I remember thinking, right, what am I going to do? And people said to me, oh, you couldn't run soccer schools because they make lots of money. And I said, I don't want to do that. That's not me. So I knew that's what I didn't want to do. So then I was carrying on with the youth team I was working with. And then an opportunity came up to run Hampton's Academy. And that was nothing. There was nothing there at the time. There was no template. The 16 to 19 programs were quite in their infancy. I think Staines Town were the biggest. Woking were big in it at the time, and everybody else was dabbling in it. And I just looked at what they did and I thought, right, okay, I'm going to be as good as them. And then when I went through all of that process, I built it with the help of other people as well, you know, people, you know, the coaches who I work with. And then the opportunity to work for the FA came. And I just thought, I was doing well at Hampton, to be quite honest, financially and everything. I was doing very well. And I thought, this is an opportunity for me to be able to do something where I can actually help more people. And it went from there, really. And kind of, there wasn't a plan. You know, it happened. You know, when I moved from Northwest London to Surrey, there was no plan as to where I was going to coach. You know, I applied for a job. There was a job in the paper. No, it wasn't. Surrey Coaches Association put out an ad for presenting coach at Epsom and Ewell. I applied for it. And that's a long story, but I got the job eventually. Mm. Okay. And then from there, and I thought, I'll go down the route of becoming, I'll take this job, I'll do this for a little bit, then I'll move to another bigger club, and I'll move to another big club, then eventually I'll coach in the conference and maybe the Football League. Didn't happen. Two jobs later, I just thought, this isn't for me. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do at that point. And then I got other jobs. I got a job at Chelsea for a little bit, working in the Girls' Centre of Excellence, Middlesex Girls' Centre of Excellence, where we met. You know, all those things. There wasn't a plan for it. It just so happened that I thought, oh, I want to do that. I want to try and do that, just to broaden my experience. So for me, in the next few years, I'll just keep trying to work hard to be the best coach that I can be. And then eventually I'll say to myself, well, you know what, I'll go for that job there or that job there if it comes available. You just don't know. Yeah. You really don't. In fact, if anybody will actually employ me, I don't know.
You'd okay, be fine, Pete, man. You know, I just want to take you back to something you touched on a few moments ago around the idea of helping people, whether they be players, whether they be coaches, whether they be from this community or that. You know, I guess I want, you know, the question I've got now is, if I was to give you 60 seconds now to maybe wrap up with some golden nuggets for the listeners and viewers, what would that be?
Right. Don't be in a hurry. 2, fall in love with learning and the game. 3, never miss an opportunity to learn. And the last thing is always ask a question. If you've got a question, always ask it. Now, if the person doesn't want to answer the question, that's more fool them. The thing about it is that you must ask the question. And if that person doesn't give you the answer, find somebody else who will give you an answer. But just don't be scared. Don't be scared. And I'll say something, you know, for it, within my role as a coach development officer with in diversity and inclusion is.
You sure that's the right terms,
yeah? Yeah. Is there's more help than there's ever been. Reach out and go and get the help. Do not be scared to go and get the help, because it's there for you. You know, we our roles are there to help people. They're not there for us to sit on our hands. You know, email, pick up the phone, whatever you want to do. You know, send a text. Don't matter. That's, you know, this is the best time ever to be a coach. Best time ever. 100%. I think.
And I think it's important that people remember to ask you for your business card. They know exactly what your job title is.
Yeah.
You know, you talked a little bit earlier around, I guess, the impact you want to have on people. You know, I guess my next question for you then, is what's the legacy that you want to leave behind off the back of how you live your life?
I just want people to think I was a pleasant individual. That's it. No more than that. You know, being, I would hate people say, "Oh, he's a brilliant coach, but what a donut he was." I'd hate that. I'd rather them say, "He was all right at coaching." I don't want them to say I was rubbish, because I think I'm all right. But I'd rather them say, "He was all right at coaching, but he was actually a nice guy. I wouldn't mind spending a bit of time with him." Because I think that's more important, more than anything. It's just being a decent human being, if you can be. You know, if you can't, then whether you're a good coach or not doesn't really matter.
Definitely. Look, Peter, it's been a very insightful conversation, and I'm sure the listeners and viewers will probably picked up loads of golden nuggets as of I, you know, and really get to understand a little bit more about who you are and what your role might actually be.
Yeah, I've got to find out what it is first, haven't I, really?
That's it. Well, look, Pete, I just want to thank you again for your time, you know, and I've got just got a quick fire round for you now then, just to kind of see where your mind's at. So three quick questions, just to see what Pete Augustine thinks.
Don't stitch me up now.
First one, plain and simple, who's better coach, Mourinho or Pep?
Woo! Mourinho.
Okay. All right, the second one, Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
All right. Final one then. Who's the best player of all time?
Pele.
Okay. All right. Well, look, there you have it. This quick question for Pete. Pete, you know, obviously he's got the first one right with Mourinho.
You're, don't tell me you're a Spurs fan.
Definitely not a Spurs fan. But Mourinho is definitely number one for me. I'm not sure about the Messi thing or Pele, but
because I'm an old crusty, that's why I can say Pele.
Well, look, Pete, I just want to say thank you again for your time this evening. It's been very very insightful and very entertaining for myself, and I'm sure it will be for the listeners and viewers as well. Just on a final note then, you know, if any of the viewers or listeners do have any questions or they want to kind of maybe find out a little bit more about you and what you do, or have any questions around some of the things that we've discussed or even beyond, is there somewhere where they can get in touch with you to do that?
Yeah, they can do. If they can email me at peter.augustine at thefa.com. They can follow me on Twitter. Now I've got to get my Twitter handle up because it's just changed recently.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to make sure that I get this right because I've got... Right, okay. What's my Twitter handle? Where is it? Oh, here it is. It's the one with the little bird. It's Peter FACDO. Yeah, at Peter FACDO. That's on Twitter. Yeah, you can get my Twitter as well. Yeah. And also, don't forget, you'll probably be able to catch some of my videos on the FA Boot Room. And that's a great resource as well. I'm just doing a bit of advertising there.
Guys, look, there you have it. Just another thanks for my guest, Peter Augustine. It's been very insightful for me and hopefully for you guys as listeners as well. You've got Pete's details there if you want to get in touch and find out a little bit more about what he does once he finds that out himself. But again, guys, look, thank you for being here. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, guys, take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.